Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertoff from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Annapolis, Maryland is Alexandra Raghi. Alexandra is president and founder of Trace International, and she'll also be a speaker at the 7th Annual European Compliance and Ethics Institute, which will be taking place in Berlin from March 10th through 13th. Alexandra, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks so much, Adam. It's fun to be on this side of the interview.
So we're going to talk today about gifts, facilitation payments, and the various slippery slopes around them in the world of anti-corruption. This is obviously the most prudent course, but you know, in some cultures, you kind of have to engage in gift giving. What are some policies you're seeing companies put in place that work?
Sure, Adam. Thanks. It's a topic that companies really struggle with. Most compliance professionals that we speak with say that the budget they invest in this is way out of proportion to the risk, but they don't know how to pull back from that without leaving their companies exposed. So it's this ongoing challenge, and it might be easier if I start with a few strategies that we see that really don't seem to work or that companies don't seem to be happy with. And that's those highly complicated charts with different standards for different countries, and then a calculation based on the seniority of the employee or even the seniority of the recipient of the gift, and it gets really unwieldy. I understand the rationale behind it. Compliance professionals want to address as many situations as possible so that the employees won't have to come back to them and ask follow-up questions, and they can resolve most of the issues on their own. But you know, at the same time, these companies are committed to abiding by the local laws in every country where they operate, and these laws are all over the place. The chances of employees violating these really complicated company policies seem to be so much greater, and we hear that they're so much greater, either because the employee misunderstands the policy or because the policy is so intimidating that they just ignore it and do what they think makes the most sense. So the companies that we talk to that have a high level of confidence in their program generally keep things pretty simple. I don't want to oversimplify it. Obviously, companies that are operating in dozens of countries overseas do need to take the local laws into consideration, but they keep it as simple as they possibly can. They make guidance available online, so it's available 24 hours a day. Employees know where to go, even if they're in different regions and different time zones. If they have urgent questions, they know who to reach, but most of those questions can be answered online. And ideally, the guidance will provide examples and not just numbers or charts. So it might say, you know, it's the Lunar New Year and you're in late stage negotiations with a Chinese state-owned entity for a big contract. How should you handle gift giving? And then, you know, perhaps it gives some very common sense suggestions, like keep it modest, give something that's consumable or has the company logo, deliver it to the state-owned entity's office, not to the government official's home, all of the things that compliance professionals are really good at. One other thing that we've seen that makes a lot of sense, even for mid-sized companies, is having a selection of pre-approved items for gift giving. The compliance team in that situation can vet the items in advance. They can vet them for cost, for appropriateness. They can buy them in bulk, probably saving money. They can have the logo affixed in advance. And the logo, of course, reduces the likelihood that the item is going to be resold and the cash pocketed by the government official. I never know how serious that concern is, but it's one that the enforcement agencies raise, so it's one that we pay attention to. You're showing off your company, you're showing off the specific product or the industry, and it gives employees some latitude to decide. If you have five or six different items, the employee can choose among them for whatever is most appropriate for the recipient that they have in mind.
Yeah, that definitely seems a lot simpler than doing a complex series of calculations to figure out what's the appropriate gift to give.
You don't want to have an algorithm for your gift-giving policy.
No. I try and avoid them in all parts of my life. Do you see companies trying to manage inbound as well as outbound giving? Are there some strategies that you've seen, because you're countering this, that, you know, help them manage that challenge?
Yeah, that's a bit of a quagmire. Companies are struggling with this because the policies are so hard to monitor, right? You know what's leaving the company's paying for it. But what are your employees receiving, particularly if they're receiving them at a meal or at a meeting where there's nobody monitoring them? Obviously, we assume that our employees are trustworthy and deserving of our trust, but handling the outliers is much trickier. So, you know, if a gift is delivered to the office and it's a consumable, most companies just set it out for everybody to share. There are situations in which, you know, gifts that are not consumable can be raffled off. We see some companies doing that, so no one recipient benefits from it. Or they might follow what at least was historically the State Department approach. I don't know if it still is, where if it's a very special, unique item, giving the employee the opportunity to buy it at fair market value and then contribute the money to a pool that benefits the whole team. The key is really just transparency. If you know what employees are receiving, the likelihood of them being unduly influenced by a vendor or a consultant or a distributor is really low. But you don't always get that transparency. You don't get that visibility if the transaction is taking place, the gift giving is taking place offsite. So I don't really have the answer for you, but this is definitely an area where companies are struggling.
Yeah, and I have to say, I've seen it firsthand through my career. I remember sort of the silly moment of getting a direct mail solicitation from a vendor who was talking about, you know, planting the seeds for whatever, for business growth. And inside was a pack of seeds for I don't know what, and having to hand in basically a 2-cent package of seeds under the no gift policy, which, you know, can be difficult and feel more than a little bit odd.
Sure. And it can get absurd quickly, but we also hear, the other end of that spectrum where somebody is offsite and given something that's extraordinarily valuable and it's awkward for them. Do they return it if they're in a country where returning it would give offense? Do they take it and then hand it in and have their employer return it? It does give rise to a complicated situation. And one response by companies has been to send out these letters saying, you know, please don't give our employees any gifts. But that gets a really mixed response internationally because there are a lot of people who think it's strange to decline a gift that you haven't been offered yet. So there's no perfect answer.
No, not at all. So let's talk about another problematic area, customs officials. You know, generally, it's a job where the people are woefully underpaid. In local countries, often they're used to getting handouts. Some would say small payments should be okay because these are really facilitation payments. They're not a bribe. Why are facilitation payments like these are in general so problematic for organizations?
Well, I would start by trying to redirect thinking on this a little bit. We call them facilitating payments, and then it kind of tidies them up. They sound less nefarious than just a bribe, which of course is what they are. And one way to do that is to say, how would you feel if you heard that the port officials in Baltimore or Miami or Los Angeles were getting gifts of facilitating payments, or we hear them called tips, but they are in effect, you know, bribes, because they're not paid enough, and because some company wanted their goods processed at a brisker pace? We would be offended by that, and we would say perhaps it's time to review the salaries of these people. We wouldn't say, you know, knock yourselves out. Customs officials can work on the side for you, and the customs officials, of course, have a serious security role as well. So you don't want them being for sale in any country. So we've taken at Trace a very, very strong position on facilitation payments for almost 20 years, believing that it really is a slippery slope. And we hear that from companies. And, you know, we understand the concerns. They want to stop paying them, but you know, they're afraid nothing will happen. Everything will come to a standstill if they stop. Or worse in their minds, that if they prohibit them outright, they'll drive them underground. But there are some very sane, methodical steps that you can take. Train your team, make sure that they understand in advance, not, you know, we're going to stop effective today, but give them advance notice. So your people on the ground can go out and advise the customs officials that have been shaking them down or that they have been, you know, providing these additional payments to, that it's got to stop. I mean, most U.S. companies have already done this in our experience, but increasingly you are in the majority if you decline to make these payments. But if it is a country where it is there's extraordinary hardship because of low salaries, then, you know, it is possible to go to the government and say, we understand that our company is a burden on your local resources, and we would like to find a way collectively to subsidize their salary, not by putting our money in their pocket, but by paying some sort of additional port fee that ensures that they're making a living wage. So there's a way to do it systemically that takes the corruption out of it, ensures that your company is a good corporate citizen, that you're paying for the services that you're getting, but that you're not, you know, thwarting the local rule of law by encouraging customs officials to favor one company over another just because, you know, it enhances their income.
And while some may be skeptical of that kind of an approach, I do know of a case about 10 years ago. I remember meeting with a not-for-profit collective action group that had done just that with a country, and it had worked out very successfully, they reported. So all of these issues, you know, we keep going back to, there's a lot of risk areas, there's a lot being done, the difficulty of controls for all of this. Are there controls that you've seen that are effective to stop improper payments, even if they're not in violation of the FCPA, but they may run afoul of corporate policies, other laws such as UK Bribery Act, and certainly the local laws of the country where these potential bribes or facilitation payments are being made?
The really interesting thing about the UK Bribery Act, in my mind, is how it's changed the landscape overall, even for companies that aren't subject to it. There was such a conversation right after the UK Bribery Act came into force about private sector to private sector bribery, which of course isn't prohibited by the FCPA, as your listeners know. That only addresses bribery of foreign officials. And also the UK Bribery Act doesn't permit facilitating payments, although I don't think anybody in the UK really expects those to be prosecuted. And so even companies that have no presence or connection to the UK started looking at their policies and saying, well, we're not going to have dueling policies. We're not going to have one for the FCPA and one for the UK Bribery Act. And we're certainly not going to have one for government officials and another one for the private sector. So they worked to the highest common denominator. And in so doing, I think they raised the standard right across the board.
Well, and one other thing I think that they've done is by making things so much simpler and consistent, it sort of goes back to our first conversation about the gift-giving policy, where the complicated points-based one of who gets what based on what is just difficult to manage versus something much simpler. Here, too, when there's one set of rules, it's a lot easier for people to follow them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we need is to ensure we retain an overarching commitment to common sense. It's, I think, as the profession becomes more sophisticated over time, and it really has, we need to recognize that compliance professionals are creative and tenacious and collaborative, and we can solve some of these issues, but we can do it in a way that's simple and elegant, and it doesn't need to be a bigger hammer each year that reflects the increased enforcement.
Absolutely. Well, Alexandra, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today and also for being a part of the 7th Annual European Compliance and Ethics Institute. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.